you. I appreciate that. It's good to be up north. I'm from down south where they have Falcons down there. You know, it was a good game in the second half, but the first half really wasn't that good. But I told Matt I couldn't come because you guys beat us so bad I wasn't willing to come. But he twisted my arm and said I had to come anyhow. Anyhow, yeah, I'm from BG. I live in BG, and I think it's been 5 years now you guys have beat us. Isn't that what goes with?
Six.
Thank you for reminding me in that one. But I tell you what, it'll be the last. But I'm originally from Chicago. I've been in Bowling Green for 29 years. I moved here as a child. But I'm originally from Chicago. I was in business for about 20 years, and then I listened to the call of God and went into the field of psychology. Been doing that for about almost 20 years. Married, got two kids. Been married 31 years, so I guess that qualifies me as a dinosaur. But I want to continue on with this why series and unpack this question of why does bad things happen to good people? And it's an interesting time to have this, especially on the tales of this whole parish thing. And the last week, all stuff's been going on, and it's kind of distant from us, but still you're faced with the reality of, man, some bad stuff is really happening. Like, what's up with that? And it just surrounds us at times, especially if you let yourself get caught up in the news very much. But a few of you might be asking, what bad things? Because in your personal life, it's been pretty smooth sailing, with the exception of maybe some school issues or whatever. And so it hasn't been that bad. And that's okay. Just listen up, because if you live long enough, bad things will happen to you. And I don't mean to be a downer about that, but that's just kind of a reality. And you notice we never ask the question of why does good things happen to good people. We sort of expect that, so we never have to unpack that question. We just want to know about the bad things. And so most of you are probably connecting at some level to the fact that, yeah, bad things have happened, and I do understand that, and I wrestle with that. And I think the wrestling part is good. But I want to start by sort of turning the tables a little bit and saying there's really three problems with asking that question of why do bad things happen to good people. The first one is, even if I could tell you why bad things happen to good people, what difference would that make? Right? Would the pain go away? Would dead people come alive? I mean, would it make everything okay? Would it solve your problems? And the answer, of course, is of course not, because you're still going through the trials, the stuff you don't like. But it's human nature for us to ask why, because we want an explanation. And we feel like we have a right to know. And we're certainly a little bit of an entitlement mentality, aren't we? But it doesn't change the outcome. Innocent people, good people, still suffer, still seemingly needlessly. Especially if you look at some of the shots in Paris. So the second problem with asking that question is the question presupposes that bad things shouldn't happen in life. It's the American way to expect that bad things shouldn't happen. Good things should happen. We expect life to be easy. We want it to be fast. We want it to be easy. We shouldn't suffer. And if I do suffer, I want some medicine that'll quickly take it away. I want my phone fast. I want my computer fast. I want my food preparation to be fast. And as I said, we have sort of this entitlement mentality that we deserve life to be super convenient and super easy. Like, OMG, it took you like forever to answer my text. And we think that's suffering, whatever. If something isn't the way we expect it, we see it as a bad thing. So the third challenge or problem with asking the question of why does bad things happen to good people is the creator of this universe told us in advance that if we're living on this planet, bad things will happen to us as a result of sin being present in the world. Maybe you know the story of the first couple, Adam and Eve, had a little bit of an apple tasting party, and God said, don't go there. And so sin, which means missing the mark, sin entered the world, and then things went south pretty quickly. And as a result, we all live in a world with sin present. So whether you're a guilty party or not, whether you're a Christ follower or not, sin happens. When I was younger, there used to be a bumper sticker that said sin happens, but it was spelled with four letters, but it was different. So a quick acknowledgement that all of us are in various places and our spiritual journey. And some of you are in just sort of starting out understanding who God is. Some of you, this is kind of a foreign concept to you when you talk about God. So keep asking questions. I'm glad you're here. No matter what you believe about God, just keep digging, keep searching. It's a great place to do that. But John, one of the authors in the Bible, John, tells an account of Jesus trying to get his disciples, the ones that were following him, to understand he was the Son of God. And it seems like Jesus was continually trying to remind them of that. And Jesus said, I need you to know who I am. I need you to trust me, because very soon Jesus said, I'm going to be gone. And you're going to be scattered. You're going to be split up. And then it says in John 16:33, I have told you all this so that you may have peace in me. Here on earth, you're going to have many trials and sorrows, but take heart. I have overcome the world. So he essentially says, after my death, my burial, my resurrection, I have overcome the world by defeating Satan. And if you're in a relationship with me, you're going to have peace in the midst of bad things happening to you. But he says, I've not wiped out sin yet. That time will come. For now, I've only blocked Satan from having absolute power over you if you follow me. In the meantime, you will experience trials and suffering. It's a part of life, living in the world with sin in it. But if you stay in a relationship with me, you'll have peace in the midst of it. We kind of avoid that thought that I'm really going to have peace in the midst of it. We really, again, we just want it to go away. And then Peter in 1 Peter 4 says this, friends, don't be surprised at the painful trial you are suffering as though something strange were happening to you. He said, don't be shocked. That's life with sin in the world. So we sort of intellectually know that, but experientially when you're going through it, it's definitely not fun, and you definitely want it to go away. And so there's sort of that head-heart thing going on. I intellectually understand you, but I don't like it. So since just knowing why bad things happen is not helpful, and since falsely believing that life should be easy is just that, false, and since Jesus tells us to expect some bad things in life because of sin, I'm going to suggest we rework the question of what can I learn from bad things happening to good people? What can I learn? Think of the Paris situation. Even if I could tell you why, and we sort of know who, but even why, it doesn't change the pain. It doesn't change the shock. It doesn't change the horror of somebody's girlfriend or boyfriend got blown up, and they didn't in that situation. So what can I learn as I go through that? And the longer you live, the more you're going to come to realize that life is like a curvy road. You never really know what's around the corner. And I don't mean that in some sort of fatalistic, negative way. I'm really more talking about the realities of life. You don't really know what each day is going to bring. And obviously we can all agree on that. We never know for sure what's coming tomorrow. But some of that unknown goes against our very nature. We're born with a grip on life as we want it. It's mine. You can see that in children. I want things my way. I will decide what is fair or not. I will decide the road ahead. And that's kind of the sin nature that we all have as a result of living, is I want it my way. And God says to us over our lifetime, he says, let go of your grip and hold on to my hand and learn from me. When you were a little kid, your parent or your person who was taking care of you would say, hold my hand, trust me, stay with me, walk with me, whether you're crossing a busy street or you're going through a crowd and all you can see is knees, right? Sort of hold on to my hand. Or if you're going through a difficult medical procedure, you're coaching them to sort of trust me, stay with me. And a healthy parent takes you through the rough time. And maybe you'll learn some life lesson, or at the very least, you learn to trust your parents more. Now, side note, some of your parents are still trying to hold on to your hands and guide you through life. But that's another talk for another weekend, to kind of like let them go from you, but they'll get there. But as you experience this sometimes overwhelming terror in trying to sort of cross the busy street of life, God says, reach up and hold my hand, and I will see you safely through the chaos, across the street, through the loss, through the unanswered questions. And only I, God says, only I will give you true hope. So it helps you to sort of drive on that curvy road or cross the busy street metaphorically, even in the darkness, even when you don't see anything. And then we end up finding our hope in the character of God and not simply in the provisions of God. And that's key because we really like the good stuff that God brings us. And God is good and does bring us good stuff, but sometimes God allows bad things to happen to good people. And so when you're driving on that road that you can't see around the corner, you trust the engineers of the road that they haven't made this thing go over a cliff or on the next corner and you're just going to fall off the cliff. So you trust the engineers of the road. And it's the same thing with God. When you can't see his hand, you trust his heart. And that's from a singer, Babby Mason, who has that in one of her songs. I can't see what God's doing right now. It doesn't make sense to me. But I'm going to trust the heart of God. And that's in blind faith sometimes. Where's the heart of God? A small child trusts his parents even in the midst of bad things. Because that small child learns to trust his or her parents. And we're learning through our challenges the same thing. Am I going to trust God even when I don't see the outcome? Now I want to stop here and kind of give voice to the few of you maybe who didn't have parents and don't have parents that are super healthy. And maybe your parents are actually not healthy. Maybe they were actually abusive. And so it can make it harder to focus on God, the Father, when your own father or your own parent was not healthy. And so it's harder to get a hold of this concept of a benevolent, loving, gracious, kind God when you have no worldview of that in your own lens. And sometimes it's the parents that didn't defend you from abuse that is even more hurtful than the parent that might have caused it. And so it's harder to hope in God, but it's not impossible. And as a therapist, I journey with a lot of folks who have been through that, and I help them process the reality so they can sort of separate out your parents from God. And it does happen. It can happen. It does take time. There's sort of a process for that. So I just kind of want to give that caveat for those of you who are saying, look, life wasn't so comfortable for me growing up. And I respect that. And hopefully nobody in this room. But I usually find a couple people that are that way. So as we learn to hope in the character of God, we understand that hope is believing in God even when we don't understand, or we don't like, or we don't agree with what's happening to us or around us. And Psalm 138 says this, "The Lord will accomplish what concerns me." I love that. That's one of my comforting verses, is the Lord will accomplish what concerns me. He knows what's going on with me. Which is why I say it's better to ask the question of what can I learn from my experience than simply why is it happening? What is God trying to accomplish through my experiences? If the Lord will accomplish what concerns me, what's going on right now? If it concerns me, what's God saying through me, through my circumstances right now? Am I learning anything, or am I just remaining hopeless? Because I don't like it my way. I don't have it my way. And so I'm hopeless. Now, obviously, when I talk about bad things, it's the range of bad things happening. And at some point, the emotions do play into it. And I have to process the emotions. And time has to take place. But I'm talking about after the immediate shock. This is not something I would ask somebody in Paris, like, oh, what do you learn from that past blowing up, bombing? That's not the time for that. It needs some time to go by. But bad things happening to us or happening to others causes us to readjust our thinking. We're forced to look at life with different lenses, meaning we realize the limits of our control. I have come to realize that it's not the world according to Tim Butler, even though I'd like it that way. Life isn't always fair. Life isn't always fast. Life isn't always easy. The psychologist Larry Crabb, in an older book called Shattered Dreams, which is an interesting book, says this: shattered dreams subjects us to pain that weakens our grip on life as we want it and stirs our appetite for the thrill of God's presence. So the thought of shattered dreams, something isn't the way I want it this way, it doesn't come out that way, it weakens our grip on life as I want it, and it stirs our appetite for the thrill of God's presence. See, experiencing bad things will either make you better or bitter. And the author says that it will weaken our grip on what we feel is our right, but if we're stubborn enough, if we're hard-headed enough, we're just going to hold on tighter to our ideology. I've seen plenty of folks who've experienced things that were really, really bad, and they're just super bitter. They have a death grip on their ideology. And to stay bitter is to stay hopeless. I face this on a regular basis in my office. And sometimes things rise to the surface more than others. I remember I was working with a woman whose boyfriend had killed her daughter 7 years ago. Okay, terrible, terrible crime 7 years ago. And I said, "Have you forgiven him?" And she said, "You never forgive that kind of thing. That is called hopelessness defined. If you never forgive, then you stay hopeless. As long as I choose not to forgive someone, I remain devastated." And I'm sure we've talked about it before here. The working definition of forgiveness is to give up any hope for a different past. To give up any hope for a different past. I was talking to a guy whose career just kind of tanked. It didn't really work out. And he said, "Now I don't expect anything from God. I don't trust anyone." Which is the same thing as bitter. There's no learning going on. There's no hope. So I posted a blog a little while ago on my website, tim-butler.com, that you can either be right or you can be happy, but you can't be both. You might want to check that out sometime. It's an interesting concept because I have a right that shouldn't have happened. You're right, it shouldn't have happened. But you can either be right or you can be happy, but you can't be both. And I think my website's in your handout there. Going back to Crabb, Larry Crabb, back to the book Shattered Dreams, there's another quote from him. "True abandonment, giving ourselves to God in utter dependence on his willingness to give himself to us, pleads only mercy. It allows us no room for control. It includes no claim on God that obligates him to do anything. Only suffering has the power to bring us to this point." And Ian and I were talking before this. He was just talking about the power of God has to be sort of the first thing to look at. When you realize the awesomeness of God and who we are. The author goes on, "The only way I can get control of my life again is to give up my right to it, to this awesome God." But that takes trust, which is hard, because I don't really like what's happening. And then Tim Keller, in another book called Counterfeit Gods, says this: "Sorrow, or suffering, is a pain for which there are sources of consolation. Sorrow comes from losing one good thing among others, so that if you experience the loss of one thing, you can find comfort in another." So he's kind of saying, look, if you find sorrow, you can kind of manage it. But he goes on to say this: "Despair, however, is inconsolable because it comes from losing an ultimate thing. When you lose the ultimate source of your meaning or your hope, there's no alternative sources to turn to. It breaks your spirit." Kind of a thick paragraph, but it'll push the issue on where is your ultimate hope. Sometimes bad things happening can tempt us to lose all hope. We just want to quit. Despair, head down, life is over. I remember distinctly when I was in grad school, and I went back to school later in life. I went back to school when I was 38, and I had to get a couple master's degrees because I couldn't just get one that made it happen. So I had to get a couple. And then I had to sit for the state boards for what I do. And I took the state boards. I spent all this time, spent all this effort. And I took the state boards, and I failed them. And I was ready to cash in my chips. It's like, that's it. I'm done. And I was in despair. Life was over. I'd put all this effort, felt I'd heard God's call, felt I went in the right direction, and boom, I failed. I'm not a great test taker. That's not my strength. But I thought life was over. I remember somebody saying to me, I wouldn't judge the quality of life on the worst day of your life, which was an interesting comment that allowed me to sort of move beyond. And ultimately, I took it again, and, you know, 14 times later, I passed it. No, I did take it again, and I passed it. But it's just over. It's just over in the moment. And the Bible, which we believe is God-inspired, written by God through people, actually has a lot to say on the subject of bad things or trials and how to process them to remain hopeful. Let's go to Romans 5 in verse 3 through 5. Paul's talking about sort of faith and peace and grace, and I won't go into the stuff that goes before these verses, but in verse 3, it says, and not only this, but we also exult in our tribulations. Bad things. Knowing that tribulations brings about perseverance. Or another word is endurance. And perseverance, proven character. And proven character, hope. And hope doesn't disappoint because the love of God has been poured out within our hearts through the Holy Spirit who is given to us. It's only God's timing that happens to be where I am right now as I'm going through the book of Romans in my personal time with God. And so I've been hanging out in Romans 5 for like, I don't know, a week. Just sort of reading it over and over again. And I love those verses because I could preach a whole hour. Because he told me I had 4 hours today, right? You guys can be here 4 hours. On those verses, because it's the trials that bring endurance or perseverance. Like, just keep going. And it's that endurance or it's that perseverance that ultimately changes your character. It changes who you are because I want to quit. I don't want to keep going. And it's that trial that makes me keep going that changes who I am. And that's when I have hope because I understand who I am and I understand who God is. And I understand that the love of God has been poured out in me if I'm a Christ follower. And so I put that together and that gives me the ability to move on for the next curve in the road. Because my character is slowly changing. You know, maybe we can think of sort of a weightlifter who lifts weights and sort of changes his or her structure. And the more weights he or she lifts, the more strength they have, built up over time. So it's the trials of lifting weight that causes me to change my structure and be able to lift more weight. Or a real simplistic level, after these winters, which are just short and brief here in Northwest Ohio, they only last about 6 months, your feet are in shoes or boots, those UGG boots, the whole time, right? And so in springtime, you take your little tender feet out, and they're really tender because they've been inside the UGG boots all for the last 6 months. And so they kind of have to get re-toughened up again. And so it changes the stones and gravel and busted glass that you walk on around campus here, changes the nature of your feet at a real simplistic level. And so it gives more strength for you to then walk more barefoot. And even going to college, I hate to break this to you, but many of you will not use the degree you're graduating with. Sorry. Your parents have wasted have used a lot of money and put you through this. But part of what college does, right, is it changes your character because it builds endurance. Semester by semester. Are we in quarters here or semesters? Semesters, right? And so you push through it. And you think this is as bad as life is ever going to get, but it's really just the beginning. So it's kind of changing your character. I mean, really, this is a quick side note. College is so predictable. Here's what's going to happen. Here's what's going to end. And here's what I expect from you along the way. Just do it, will you? It's kind of that simple. But anyhow, that's back in grad school, it was pretty simple because I had sort of learned some things like college is not that difficult. But I'm not a great student, so it's tough for me to get A's. But anyhow, so it changes who you are. It changes your character. And it causes you to persevere, which is exactly what those verses are saying. And so the upside of trials is they make you a better person. And then they give you more hope, because the hope is not in you, the hope is in God. And so in order to sort of persevere or endure or carry on, we need what I would consider to be sort of anchor verses, or verses that can ground me so I can have hope when I'm going through these tough times. And it reminds me that no loss is too great for God's grace. And let me share with you a few of my own anchor verses, and you can claim them as your own, or you can come up with your own. But there's a couple of them I have, just a few. I could go on for a long time on this subject too. But Psalm 27, 13 and 14. I would have despaired unless I believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong. Let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for the Lord. See, I would have despaired, or I would have remained inconsolable is really what the text says. You can't console me unless I believed in my heart of hearts that I'm going to see some good things from the Lord here and now. So I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait for the Lord. I'm going to be strong. I'm going to take courage. I'm going to wait, which means to look eagerly for. I'm going to look eagerly for what the Lord's doing. If I didn't have that hope, then yeah, you live, you die, you're 6 feet under, you're done. There's nothing to that kind of a life. But I would have despaired unless I really believed, you know what? God is God. And I'm going to see. I'm going to look eagerly for what God's doing. Another one, Romans 8:28. If you've walked with Christ for any length of time, you know this verse. It's one of those kind of platitude verses that people can throw at you. Not healthy to throw at somebody else. Better that you throw it to yourself. We know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. That's a verse that's only good if you're reading it for yourself. It's really cheap and shallow to sort of throw it at somebody else who's going through something, and they're often not comforted by that verse unless they get it for themselves. It's a verse to be careful with. But it really means, you know what? God causes all things to work together for good. That's because that's what he does, but we don't always see it. And then David's writing in the Psalms about sort of the meaning of life or the existential conversation in Psalm 39. And now, Lord, for what do I wait? My hope is in you. For what do I wait? What do I look eagerly for? My hope or my expectation is in you. What's the meaning of life? God, you've got it under control and I don't. So I'm going to look to you expectantly for the meaning of life. And you're going to unveil it. You're going to roll it out for me as I go. And then Hebrews 6:19. This hope we have is an anchor of the soul, a hope both sure and steadfast, and one which enters within the veil. So again, my soul, my emotions are like a ship. They're getting tossed all over the place. And bad times, they get really tossed. And good times, I'm kind of steady. And I need that hope that's the anchor, that's holding down my ship to keep it from getting totally tossed all around the place. It's an anchor of the soul. And what do you lose sight of? You lose sight of hope while you're going through tough times. And so it's regaining the hope and finding what is my hope in? Just good grades? Or is the hope bigger than that? So I'm going to read a poem written by a 12-year-old girl. It's entitled Hope. And I may choke up as I read it. We use hope every day as we sit and walk and lay. But hope is more than what meets the eye, because that is how God made it, and no one knows why. Hope is believing that God knows everything, whether it crawls on the ground or flies with wings. But hope is believing in the best, believing that maybe you will surely be blessed. I especially use hope every day that I can stay alive in more than one way. And the reason that poem is so powerful to me is that poem was written by my daughter just a few months before she was killed. She was killed by an overdose of chemo. The drug that was supposed to heal her killed her. And I'm no expert on loss and suffering, but I do know something about it. I do understand a little bit of bad things happening to good people. And did I spend my time in emotional despair and hopelessness and dead emotionally? Absolutely. Absolutely. Did I ask God why this terrible thing happened to such an innocent little girl at the age of 12? Absolutely. But then I realized as time went on that I would never know why from my human perspective. And there certainly is no reason or answer that would have soothed my deep loss. But I realize that God does not promise me full accountability. He's not responsible to answer me all my questions. Where was I when the world was created? Who am I to believe that I have even the capacity to know that all God knows and all that God's doing? His ways are bigger. His thoughts are higher. Who is God? Who am I? But I got to that only through the process of suffering and endurance and changed character. Because in the fullness of time and with the grace of God and in my efforts of moving on with life, I learned what I refer to now as the gifts of suffering. Isaiah refers to this as the treasures of darkness. The things that you only learn while you're going through a disappointment or a trial. And even the death of a child, which might be the worst kind of a bad thing, was not too devastating for the grace of God. And the same God who gave my daughter Lynn hope as she faced her own death, and she knew it. She was a bright little girl. The same God who has given my wife and I hope to carry on without her can allow you to find hope in your situation, past, present, or future. So you end up with hope in the character of God, not just in the provisions of God, as I said a few minutes ago. And if you seek to find the answer of why, you may end up being frustrated. But if you seek Him, you will find Him. That relationship is what you'll find. And if you seek hope, you'll find it, but only in Him. And that hope, as I said, is the anchor of the soul. So no loss is too devastating to cause you to lose your hope in God, because no loss is outside of the control of God. The sovereign God, fancy word for saying God is over everything. God's power is greater than any pain we have. That doesn't mean that we won't need a time for grieving. We talked about that briefly. Time to process the emotion. I really think life kind of distills down to sort of two components. One is process our emotions, kind of manage our emotions. And the other one is follow God. Follow the character of God. Trust in the character of God. So I'm processing my emotions and I'm following God. To just do one without the other is unbalanced. If I spend all my time processing my emotions, then I'm simply self-absorbed. If I spend all my time just following God and don't acknowledge the emotions, then I'm a robot. And so I'm processing emotions, but I'm trusting and following God. And that is a constant journey that takes a constant discipline. Because I know full well that my sufferings are not done. I will face more situations where I will say, God, what are you doing here? It doesn't make sense to me. So I process my emotions, and I follow the character of God. So I don't know where you are in your journey in life, whether you've had past loss or something you're walking through right now, or maybe this is something you kind of stick in your back pocket for future. I don't know. But rather than asking why bad things happen, I want to encourage you to pursue the God of hope and find out what you can learn from bad things happening. Through the journey, And in time, let him fill you with that joy, with that peace, with that hope. So I kind of spin the question, but my hope is that you'll see it in a wider lens and it'll make sense to you. Let's pray. Father God, thank you today just for allowing us to be in your presence. God, thank you for calling us here today. And thank you for allowing us to be carried in those times when we feel like we really can't see you. We're having a hard time trusting you. But God, it doesn't change who you are. It just means that we're frail. We're so human. We're so finite that we really can't see the infinite. And we certainly can't see what you're doing at times when we're totally overcome by grief or loss or sorrow or hopelessness or despair. God, it doesn't change your character. So God, give us the ability to hang on, to believe in you, even when the road is curvy and we absolutely do not see what's ahead. And God, we know this is a continual changing of our character, a continual refining of us, refining the way we see life. And God, thanks for being patient with us, that you put up with our childlike nature, our impulsivity, and our forgetful memory, and that you really are in it for the long haul with us. God, carry us over the speed bumps. In Christ's name.